From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
I'm from Cleveland Heights.
West Oakland, California.
I think my landlord marketed it to me as Temescal, but it's actually Golden Gate.
Rome 58.
I actually don't live in Oakland, I live in Richmond.
Coming up, we'll follow up on one city's efforts to find housing for its homeless population.
I can stay clean, and you know, I walk a lot dirty. I just feel like I'm part of the world, you know, part of people now.
Then we'll meet an education researcher who wants to change how we think about math.
So unfortunately, in the US right now, there's a belief that you're either a math person or you're not. Kids believe that, parents believe it, and most devastatingly, teachers believe it.
And we'll hear about what motivates an aspiring young hip-hop artist in San Francisco.
I want to be someone that actually makes a change.
That's all coming up next on Cross Currents. Last fall, we reported on the impromptu community that came together on a small piece of land in the East Bay known as the Albany Bulb. Homeless people pitched tents and built wooden sheds all over a grassy former landfill with gorgeous views of the bay. Bulb campers said that even though they didn't have conventional houses, they did have a group of people who took care of each other, shared meals, and hauled water together. Like longtime resident Catherine Cody.
Out here, if I yell for help, somebody's going to come. Because my neighbors care. They do, and they're going to come.
But the community that formed on the Bulb was something of a problem for the city of Albany. The land was supposed to become part of the McLaughlin East Shore State Park, and some park supporters urged the city to enforce a ban on camping there.
Camping, building structures, dwelling out there, living without plumbing, all of those things that are happening out on the Bulb violate approximately 14 laws that we deal with. And it also breaks faith by allowing certain people to privatize.
The Albany City Council voted to move forward with the clearing plan and hired a nonprofit to help the campers find housing. For more than half a year now, social workers have been meeting with Willing Bulb residents to help them get IDs, apply for disability income, and look for affordable apartments. So far, 13 homeless residents of Albany, most of them from the Bulb, have relocated to rentals in Richmond, Berkeley, and Oakland. Today, KALW's Mary Reese is going to tell us how two of those former Bulb residents are faring.
I'm standing with Doris Sanchez in the concrete courtyard outside her new apartment in Richmond. We step into the grassy alleyway for a walk around her neighborhood. In a black t-shirt and jeans, the 54-year-old redhead laughs as she tells me about one adjustment she's made.
Keys. I am not used to keys, let me tell you. When you have a tent, you don't have keys.
Sanchez lived at the Albany Bulb on and off for 16 years.
Now I have keys and I gotta lock everything up. And you gotta go lock the front door, you gotta lock the gate.
When she and her boyfriend first moved in, someone stole their bikes out of the courtyard. They weren't used to locking things up. Sanchez says no one stole from them back on the Bulb. Though she lived in a tent, she was among people she knew and trusted.
And then you put your key inside here and you lock it from inside there. So when I'm coming down the alley and I gotta get in, I'm not. I gotta try to find that hole in the door there.
We head up the alley towards the main road. The block is a mix of small apartment buildings and single-family homes, some with bars in the windows and wrought iron fences around the yard. We pass a church that serves a hot breakfast every third Saturday of the month. Sanchez hasn't tried out the food herself yet, but she hears it's good from her boyfriend.
And then I go to counseling, and my counselor's down the street.
Sanchez started seeing the counselor last fall, when she was still at the Bulb.
Yeah, it was about my son and everything, my son that passed away.
Sanchez had three children, but they moved away once she became homeless in the late 1990s. Last year, she reunited with her older son, who tracked her down at the Bulb and visited her there a few times. But then, late last summer, her son was found dead in the water near the Golden Gate Bridge.
I was ready to lose it. And I was staying in the tent all by myself and just sitting there cutting my hair. And then I recognized, I looked in the mirror and see my hair was really, it was gone, it was short. So I realized, oh God, I'm going down. So I had to shape up. So I kept myself busy with the housing people.
The city of Albany hired the Berkeley Food and Housing Project, and they started working with Sanchez to find a place. She looked at six or seven apartments with them before picking the one in this neighborhood. We walk down the main commercial stretch, Cutting Boulevard, pass a laundromat, a coffee shop, and a check-cashing place where Sanchez pays her PG&E bill each month. She tells me she's been getting Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, for some time, even while on the bulb, because of carpal tunnel syndrome. Without a home address, she says, she had to pay somebody else to get the money.
I have a payee, so she cashes a check for me, and then she gives me my money in an envelope.
Sanchez says finding work would put her one secure source of income, her SSI payments, at risk.
You can't have no other kind of income, or they'll take the money out of your check.
Her boyfriend and their roommate also get SSI checks. Pooling together, they can cover the rent and PG&E bills, though Albany paid the first 3 months' rent. We head back to her place. Sanchez greets one of her two cats.
Hi, baby. That's why my cat's so fat, because she don't have trees or nothing to jump up and go up on around here. So she's getting really fat and lazy. Oh, ain't this something? Look at this.
Remember the strangeness of keys? Sanchez is having difficulty with the lock on her apartment door.
Uh-oh, we might not get in. Oh, God, thank you. I got to tell landlord about this before I get locked out of the house.
Back inside her apartment, Sanchez tells me how her life has changed.
So far, I've gotten, since I moved out of the bulb, I've gotten an apartment, I got my ID, not doing drugs. I go counseling for that, and then I have my teeth being worked on, and I got my glasses.
Over the course of 7 different appointments, a dentist has removed her bad teeth. Soon will come the dentures, all paid for by Medi-Cal. And more changes are in store. Now that she has a stable address, Sanchez can let her payee go. She'll get her SSI checks directly in the mail. That's $50 more in her pocket every month. She says she's bored and lonely without all her friends at the bulb. But being inside again means a lot to her.
I'm a human being now. You know, I feel like I'm part of the world now. I pay my rent, and I'm just part of the world. I'm not living out in a city dump, you know, for free. I had the best view out there, though, I have to tell you.
About 12 miles south of Sanchez's apartment, another person relocated from the Albany bulb isn't sure it was worth it.
Would you like some soda or something?
No, thank you.
Larry Cabrera moved to a duplex in West Oakland in January after 3 years on the bulb. The city of Albany is paying the rent for him and his two roommates. Like Sanchez, Cabrera prefers living indoors. For one thing, he's got a refrigerator and a sink. He says having a refrigerator where he can keep food fresh for longer helps him stretch his food stamps later in the month. Here in his kitchen, the shelves are nearly empty, except for some cereal, peanut butter, and beans. But Cabrera says it's a lot simpler to make his favorite tostadas here than it was on the bulb.
Well, it takes a long time to cook the beans and chorizo and, you know, to make the sauce, and usually has to be kept cold. Using your hands a lot with the food is hard to keep your hands clean down at the bulb than it is, you know, here.
Back in the bulb, getting water meant hauling 5-gallon containers more than a quarter mile up and down a hill behind the Golden Gate Fields complex.
They have a hose with, you know, hot or cold water they let us use.
In his new place, he's got a tap and a bathroom.
I used to bag it and take it out.
So this apartment's cleaner and has running water and electricity, but its location is a drawback for Cabrera. He's much farther away from his friends at the bulb and from his sister, who lives in Richmond.
Out here in West Oakland, it's like kind of away from everything that I'm used to. It's sort of, you know, a pain to commute because transportation, I only have a bicycle.
The day I came to visit, Cabrera had ridden his bike to the store 8 blocks away and back. That may not sound like much in this flat Oakland neighborhood, but Cabrera's lungs are scarred from years of working in asbestos abatement. On a bad day, after a ride like that,
I'm pretty done for the day, almost. Come home and lie down or go to sleep.
Buses and BART are not an option, because he can't buy a ticket. He has no money. Despite the asbestos damage, he hasn't been able to collect disability or his pension. Back on the bulb, things were different.
Well, I used to make a little bit of money doing scrapping metal and recycling.
Now that's not happening. Living away from the bulb has been lonely for Cabrera. One friend from the Bulb also moved into this apartment, but even so, he's felt isolated and worse.
Down there, usually a lot of people are asking me for help for something, one thing or another. And, you know, it keeps me busy. You know, I like to be there for people. And over here, I feel, you know, I don't know, kind of worthless.
Cabrera and his roommates have been in West Oakland for about 4 months. Meanwhile, Albany's contract with the nonprofit expired, and the initial social workers moved on to other things. The city signed a new contract in late February, and the Berkeley Food and Housing Project hired a full-time social worker to work with Albany homeless. Cabrera met him for the first time in mid-March, but didn't have a chance to discuss his needs. He thinks that once the rent subsidy from the city of Albany ends, he'll be outside again.
I don't know if it's, can I say, it's worth, you know, I guess giving up to live here for that. Otherwise, you know, being over there and having to do it, work harder to do the same thing, but also a little more happier, you know.
Meanwhile, the Bulb community is shrinking. In mid-April, the city of Albany reached a legal settlement with Bulb campers who agreed to leave by April 25th in exchange for $3,000 each. The full-time social worker from the Berkeley Food and Housing Project will continue working with current and former Bulb residents through February of next year. By that time, more resettled campers will be trying to form community in new places. In West Oakland, I'm Mary Reese for Cross Currents.
What do you think about the efforts to help homeless people where you live? You can let us know by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106 and we'll try to feature your story on air. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Do you remember this?
Math class is tough. Do you like toasted marshmallows? Let's plan a birthday dance. Math class is tough.
Back in 1992, toy company Mattel nearly had to recall its Teen Talk Barbie. Women's groups protested the doll's use of the phrase, math class is tough. They called the company out for perpetuating a harmful stereotype that boys and men are better at math than girls and women. Research, especially over the past 10 years, has shown that there is no innate difference in math ability between males and females. And yet, the stereotype persists. Women earn more than 40% of all college math degrees, and yet their presence is scarce in the higher echelons of mathematics. The statistics for women of color are even lower. Stanford education researcher Joe Bowler says the seeds of this disparity are sown well before college. She says as soon as kids first go to school, they start to hear you're either a math person or you're not.
This idea that you haven't got the brain for math is really outdated. Anybody can grow that brain that's needed to excel in math.
Today we'll continue our series on women in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, by hearing from Joe Bowler about her research and where it comes from. KALW's Jen Chien spoke with her at her office on the Stanford campus.
You know, I had a strongly feminist mother. She always said, you know, do maths, make sure you do maths because you're a girl. I was sort of equally torn between going to maths and English and literature, and she really pushed me to do maths because I was a girl. I was good. I mean, I could always do the math problems, so I saw myself as good at math, but I was really aware as a child how bad the math teaching was. And I used to help my friends, and I, even at a young age, I used to think, why can't the teacher explain it like this? Or why is the teacher so off-putting? Sometimes math teachers are off-putting.
Your research points to the fact that the kind of traditional way of teaching is not working. Mm-hmm. And you advocate a more problem-solving and critical thinking-based mm-hmm. approach rather mm-hmm. than rote memorization. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little more about what is the difference between those approaches?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, many, many years ago, hundreds of years ago, people started out teaching just by telling kids methods and having them reproduce them. And people thought that was the way you learned. I could tell you something, it would just go into your head. And then we have a lot of research on learning. We know it doesn't work like that. People actually have to make sense of things themselves and engage in math in different ways. So it's important to have students be more actively engaged in math. If you can involve a kid in trying to think through a problem that they can't solve, like an example, I was in a classroom the other day and the kids didn't know how to do calculus. So the teacher had given them all lemons and knives and said, so you can come up with a theory about how to find the volume of this shape. So the kids thought about it and they did some different things with the lemons and they all came up with these ideas, and then she taught them sort of the formal methods of how you do that. And the kids at that point are really interested because they want to solve the problem. We also do terrible things to kids in schools. Like one of the worst things we do is give time tests. There's now a whole lot of evidence that shows that time tests are the early onset of math anxiety for a lot of kids.
What is a time test?
So they will give kids a test of 50 questions to do in 3 minutes. And it does many awful things to kids, one of which it's such a powerful moment, that the pressure they feel in those time tests, that it sets up anxiety, but also it makes them think that's what math is.
Can you talk a little bit about how the way that math is taught influences existing achievement gaps mm-hmm. or achievement gaps that have been researched, like girls versus boys right. or black and Latino students versus white and Asian students, for mm-hmm. example?
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, in the U.S. right now, there's a belief that you're either a math person or you're not. Kids believe that, parents believe it, and most devastatingly, teachers believe it. So when we teach math in a rote way, what you'll find is boys will often sort of go along with it. And the girls get quite anxious about it and they're thinking, you know, I don't get this method. Why does it work? Girls in particular want math environments where they can talk about methods and understand where they come from, why they work. So understanding math in that way is great for everybody. And that's how we want all kids understanding math. But it turns out that girls more than boys need that. The other inequities, the racial inequities we have in the system, one of the most shocking and horrible pieces of data I saw in the last year was from a big study of different school districts that was showing that kids were scoring proficient or advanced on algebra tests but not being moved on when they finished algebra and being held back to do it again. Something like 40% of kids who actually achieve at the highest levels were made to repeat it. And when they looked at those kids, nearly all of them were minority kids. So what you're seeing is really racial discrimination in attitudes towards kids and them being held back. But in terms of teaching approaches, the approaches that we know work from research, which are problem solving, engaging with math visually, which is very important, are not good for a particular group of kids. They're good for all kids. They're good for girls, boys, white, black, any color kid. And it's really important that we have students working in these ways, because that is how math is used in the world. So if we could have those approaches in classrooms and we could stop giving kids the message that math isn't for them, especially girls and students of color, then the whole world would change.
That's Joe Bowler, professor of education at Stanford University. She spoke with KALW's Jen Chien. Bowler has founded a nonprofit, U-Cubed, to help drive changes in math education. To learn more, just go to our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And it's thanks to a little bit of science and engineering that we're able to bring you our next story of local hip-hop artist Trayvon Hicks.
I only really started doing my own music stuff once my grandpa made me a computer, because me and my brother, we like to just sit in my room with his laptop and we'll just listen to beats and freestyle.
After a few years of tinkering around with beats at home, Hicks discovered the youth-run recording studio inside of Sunset Youth Services in San Francisco. It's called Upstar Records, and it's where Hicks, who's now 19, has been working on his first album called The Man Behind the Pen. He shares some of the tracks in this edition of Bay Area Beats.
My name is Trayvon Terrell Hicks. My artist name is Mystic Blaze.
It's Mystic Blaze.
I wanted to make something that was everything made by me. I do the songwriting, I do the beats, and I do my own mixes.
Welcome to the man behind the pen.
The way some of the songs come out is it's an idea in my head, and then I will sit down at the beat machine and try and make that idea come out.
I'm at the brink of insanity from people who were mad at me. Women who were sad to see that my life was a tragedy. Threatened by society, by lies, you're too blind to see. Unable to contain all the rage that's inside of me.
The idea I had with my analogy was, I started thinking about, like, all the little issues that I have with, like, the way life is now.
Poverty, oppression, racism got us all weak. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X fought for us to be free from all three, yet we still see defeat. It's like we bowed to the man and completely destroyed the dream. We never.
When I said that, it was like me basically saying we had these people that actually fought for us to be against these things, but somehow we're still being pushed down by them. So it's like the man actually still has control over us, even though people have fought for it to be gone.
This is the truth, and I'm just sorry to say it. I'd rather be the one before the minister starts praying. We live a life of lies, and it's hard to survive if we are a group of lions that annihilate the pride.
The whole thing I was saying with that, I was just putting it out there. Like, instead of us fighting for each other, we're fighting against each other.
We all need a change, but the change starts with I. Don't want to make it big, just want people to acknowledge me. And I hope to make a change when you hear my analogy.
Like, I want to be someone that actually makes a change that's different than what we hear in the music industry. The song, Invisible, it started off as just a project.
Saturday morning, no TV to watch my cartoons, no milk for my cereal, no bowl and no spoon. Yo, mom, when we gonna get some food in this house, she said.
As soon as that food stamps check comes around.
The idea behind it was to show people how hard it is to get out of poverty, and how, like, you, if you're born into it, it's harder for you to get out of it. So the way we set it up was one person would rap as the child who's in poverty, someone would rap as a teenager, and one as an adult. And I did the teenage role because I put myself in a state of mind of if I was in this situation, how would life be for me? And knowing the stories behind people, like, you can go to school, but majority of what happens in school, you'll probably get kicked out because of either the color of your skin, the teacher doesn't like you, or just some odd random reasons. And the thing that happens with you is if you want to get a job, there's probably not going to be a job out there for you because there's not really that many youth opportunities in the city. Like, if someone with power was to really see the song and actually understand what we was going through, I would hope that they would actually try and help. I feel like my motivation just comes from the love of just all music. I want to be able to do with my music what music does to me. I want to, like, be able to change the way you think about stuff with the way I write.
Lost in this world without the vision to see a hazy brain with day sight leaves me lost in a dream. Who am I? May I ask Mr. Blaze what you say? And tell me what's Trayvon in this world without space. I can't find myself. My true form has been lost behind my wealth with no friends or family. Just missing in his music, searching life for Trayvon to understand what he's doing. Suicidal.
That piece was produced by KALW's Audrey Dilling. You can find more Bay Area Beats at our website. It's KALW.org, and click on Cross Currents.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KLW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Jen Sheehan, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Julia Scott, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Stephen Short, Jeremy Dalmas, and Melanie Young. Our line producer today is Leela Day. Our engineer is Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are independent local public radio.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings.
You know the song, but it's not quite Lord, is it? Nope, it's Decadence, the a cappella student group from Cal Berkeley. Actually, this is only the female component of the group, but you'll be able to hear all of the members of Decadence this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, when they're having their spring show. That'll take place on campus in Wheeler Hall on Saturday and Worcester Hall on Sunday. Both shows start at 7:30 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. Or just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
We are caught in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It's a run in our blood. The catalog's just ain't for us.